he decides, he's like, I changed my mind. Like, I want to keep, oh, I'm going to cry. He wants to keep his memories.
You bitch.
I was a mess during this movie.
It's funny. You watch it. Maybe I'm a sociopath. I feel nothing. I'm a cinema sociopath. And welcome to another exciting edition of the Brothers Movie Factory. I'm your host, Ben. With me, as always, the brother of the Brothers Movie Factory.
Call me Clem.
I forgot who you were. Erased from existence. Buried alive.
Clementine. I don't want to hear any jokes.
The Tangerine Dream. Apple crisscross applesauce.
You know that song? Don't know it.
Nope. That it eludes me, and I just watched the movie and it eludes me again. You were like trying to keep going. I was just naming any fruit or citrus I could think of. And as you can see, wasn't many.
My name's Apple, and I don't want to hear any jokes. I don't know any. Like, oh, you know, the song. What song? You know, apple bottom jeans, boots with the fur. With the fur. Like, sorry, never heard it.
Better not hear any Johnny Appleseed jokes. Yes, indeed, here we are, the Brothers Movie Factory. Gus joining me over there. And what we do here on the pod is every week we watch a film. We then take to the pod to discuss said film, what we liked, what we didn't, what worked, what didn't. That is when we take the movie to the factory. That's where we take the movie we just watched. And we imagine what it would look like if it came out today. Who would direct it? Who would compose it? Who would star? Same film, same story, so to speak. Just modern booking for a modern audience. So, with that being said, here we are. Here we are in the second week on the podcast itself. Not the second week of June, but here we are in the second week of the podcast itself, celebrating June Carey, the month of Jim Carrey here on the podcast. Last week we did Dumb and Dumber, one of probably Jim Carrey's most famous movie, I'd argue. And this week, we decided to do one of his more serious films, The Number 23. Now, we decided to do Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. Jim Carrey, Kate Winslet, Kirsten Dunst, Mark Ruffalo, Elijah Wood, and many others. However, top billing, obviously, Kate Winslet and Jim Carrey in this one. And this movie is a far departure from your normal Jim Carrey-isms. So there's some things there. There's tinges where you're like, that's very Jim Carrey-esque, but it is a far departure, and this is a beautiful film.
Indeed. Why bring on an actor if you don't want some of their isms, am I right?
I suppose.
But Jim Carrey, definitely one of his earlier dramatic pieces, not earlier.
2004.
He dabbled in some dramatic work in, I would say his kind of dramatic role would actually be in Liar Liar. You know what I mean? Like, it is a straight comedy, but he has some heartfelt scenes and such. But his next film after Liar Liar was The Truman Show. I would say that's his first dramatic role. And then after that, he did Man on the Moon. And then a few years after that, he did The Majestic, which I don't know if you've ever seen The Majestic. It's all right. It's a little boring. But and then here we are in 2004, and he's taking another stab at the old dramaticisms. And I would say it's funny. Like, you have a comedic performance, and then you got a dramatic performance. And the automatic idea is like, oh, this is better acting. This is dramatic, right? So I was going to say this might be Jim Carrey's best performance, in my opinion. But that's tough to say because I do love him as Lloyd. I do love him as, you know, Ace Ventura and things like that. So
it's when you see someone act. It is funny because that is a thing. That is like people. I've heard before people say, like, when Paul Rudd, for example, turns in like a really solid performance, like an emotional scene in like Ant-Man, or even the scene in Endgame where he hugs his daughter. Like that's you see that and you're like, man, he can act. But you like anytime he's just being a comedy, like or like doing comedy and being a comedian, it doesn't like register in your head that you're like, oh, they can act. Like even like down to, for example, again, Paul Rudd, like when he's like Die Hard. Oh, no, that's not one. That's a good moment. That's good acting. But it's not, you know, you look at that side by side with something more dramatic of his and you're like, oh, well, that's this is better because it's more dramatic. Same with Jim Carrey, where if I guess maybe it, comedy, even though I don't believe this, comes across as easier than drama.
A lot of cases, good comedy is more difficult.
Yes.
Just a different way of having to think. But getting back to it, I just really think Jim Carrey, as far as a performer, is on a whole nother level in this movie. He puts in such a real human performance.
Yes.
Yes, you have a little bit of his isms, but he dips into like a whole new atmosphere. Like he's a different person. And yeah. This Joel character is very quiet, reserved, keeps to himself. Nervous, anxious, depressed. And Jim Carrey's portrayal of Joel is brilliant, in my opinion. And definitely, if not my favorite performance of his, like...
One of.
Yeah, top three, to be honest. I loved him in this movie. And same with Kate Winslet.
Yeah, she's good in this film.
She's always good. And... was not the original choice for this movie. She had to, you know, audition. And the reason she got the part, mainly, like, the big rub, was actually that she was disagreeing with the script. I know it doesn't really make much sense, but this script was written by Charlie Kaufman, who was a renowned screenwriter. And, yeah, everyone was, like, praising the script so much. And she was the only one to kind of bash it a bit in her audition, and they're like, you know what, that's the attitude we're kind of going for.
Yeah,
along with the performance you just gave for the audition. So she got the role, and yeah, she's almost the exact opposite of Joel.
Yeah.
Clementine, the character, she's very outgoing and what's the word, not compulsive,
eccentric. Yeah, compulsive,
eccentric, impulsive, sorry,
impulsive.
That's what I was going for. And, yeah, she's not shy, let's say.
No.
Quick to get upset.
Yes.
And, yeah, she's just, what'd she say? She's, I'm just a fucked up person trying to find my way. And that's it. At the core of their performances and in the writing, these are just two real people. There's nothing like extraordinary about either of them, but the way they're written and the way they're portrayed is just brilliant.
Yeah.
And it's like, for me, it's like, they're a magnet and I'm a piece of metal. I'm just like going with them.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of how this movie goes too, is it takes you along for the ride. And I would argue this movie is it's a drama at its core, but it's also would you say it's a romance movie? I think it is. I think there is a pretty strong romance within it. It's more dramatic, and it's not your everyday romance. Whereas, like we talked about, like 500 Days of Summer being a very like real romantic movie, romantic comedy,
it's a romantic comedy.
Yeah,
so would this be a romantic drama?
I suppose, because you know, there's a thing about like your rom-coms and like your 500 Days of Summer, I think, are just an S tier. And then you have your like usual like Nicholas Sparks movie, you know, that's what you think when you think like romance movie. This is different altogether. This has way more. It's almost darker than most romance movies. Right. Cause it is a decently dark premise. And it's a really interesting premise of what would happen if you could erase someone from your mind, and not have to deal with the pain and the hurt that comes along with that. And even right down to, you see it when he first goes to the office. I don't know if you picked up on this or not. But there's an older lady in the waiting room crying, and she's holding her dog bowl and, like, pictures of her dog. Like, her dog just passed away or something, so she's wondering, you know, what, you know, can I just forget my dog? And that's an interesting concept.
Get rid of that hurt.
Yeah, that's an interesting concept because it, on a philosophical level, which this movie is full of, you know, a lot of times your memories, that hurt, that pain, but those experiences are what shape you. And so this film asks the question, what would happen if you just erased them? Would it matter? Would it change anything, truly? Or would you find yourself right back at the beginning, right back at square one? And if you did find yourself back at square one, would you make all the same mistakes again? And that's a really interesting concept altogether, tied together by the strong performances.
I want to pause for our spit listeners, because we are going to discuss different beats of this movie, different scenes, moments, and explore the symbology a bit of this movie. And if you haven't seen this movie, I strongly recommend giving us a pause, go checking that movie at, and then come on back. We'll take you, because I really think this is a special and surprising movie with all kinds of unique twists and turns. So check it out, come back, and listen in on the discussion.
Yeah, because it is, in terms of the flow and the timeline, I don't know if I've truly ever seen a movie quite have the same pacing, the same timeline, so to speak.
Yeah.
Because it does a classic, kind of starts at the end and then works backwards. It goes back to the almost to the beginning, and then it ties back to like a middle portion of the movie, and then from there it goes all the way backwards while it's also progressively moving forwards, which sounds confusing, but it doesn't. You get what I mean by that too? It's going backwards, but it's also progressing forwards.
I would say it's like a circle.
Yeah.
So let's say you start your circle, and in this case, it's going to start where the story kind of ends. So as the circle is moving to get back to the original point, you're going from the beginning, but then it starts at the end and almost kind of moves backwards. Like, all the memories he has are like from end to beginning. And then ultimately it will lead back to where this movie started and then keep going.
Yeah.
And the story will continue beyond what we saw in the opening scene. So as Ben explained, it's a story of two people, who boy meets girl. They fall in love and have this wonderful relationship, but it's just one of those things. Love falls apart. People are different, and they break up. They have a bad fight, and things ended. And one thing leads to another, and that's where this movie becomes very unique. There is a company called Lacuna Inc., and they specialize in erasing memories. Joel finds out Clementine erased him. So to escape the hurt, he wants to do the same thing. He wants the procedure. And that's where this movie gets even more interesting and unique, is most of this movie follows his memories, because he's experiencing them like in third person. He's like part of them, but he's also viewing them. It's very dreamlike. It's shot very dreamlike. And yeah, we get to experience these memories, and yeah, it starts at the end of their relationship, so things are bad. We get to see why things ended, and we get to see like that progression, but we're progressing into a more positive way.
Yes.
It's going backwards, so it's going to when things got good. And halfway through the procedure, and he's in this like third person view of his memories, he decides, he's like, I changed my mind. Like, I want to keep, I'm going to cry. He wants to keep his memories.
You bitch.
I was a mess during this movie.
It's funny. You watch it. I maybe I'm a sociopath. I feel nothing. I'm a cinema sociopath. I have no emotion when watching films.
The only thing that gets you is Iron Man.
How's Iron Man get me?
When he dies.
What?
Oh, I'm saying an Endgame.
Oh yeah, it gets me choked up, but I was drunk.
I had some rollers, but
Dragonheart tears. Yeah,
not quite. But
that's a sad world when Dragonheart makes you cry more than this movie. It's a sad world when Dragonheart makes you cry harder than most movies.
If I would have watched this movie about 4 years ago, I don't know if I would have made it out alive.
Yeah.
I would have been so sad.
Just dehydrated. All the liquid left your body.
I'd have died.
You cried and pissed yourself. You were that upset.
But, yeah, so now he's, like, navigating through his memories. And then Clementine, in the memories, kind of also becomes a third person. And they are trying to hide in different recesses of his brain, of his memories, so he can keep a memory of her. It's really awesome how, like, that concept is executed. Just the camera working techniques. There's some visual effects, but not a lot. It's mostly in-camera stuff.
Yeah.
Just, like, camera tricks, forced perspective, and just, like, we're going to follow these people, and then they're going to go behind something, and on the other end, they're going to be dressed different. They actually did that kind of stuff, like, real super quick, just take off their clothes and have a different outfit on, walk out the other side, and it's like, oh, now I'm in a different memory. Or they're in a room, and they walk into the next room, and they walk back, and the room's all changed.
Yeah, and that's one of the first shots where I was like, oh, that was really neat, was when he is explaining how he went to see Clementine. He didn't realize that she had just erased him from her memory. He went to see her and give her a Valentine's Day present. He's like, she acted like she didn't even know me, but it was because she really didn't. She had him erased from her memory. And he's like walking out of the library and all the lights are shutting off. And when he gets into the next room, he's like back in the present. And he was telling that story. That's a unique like camera trick, so to speak.
Yeah, that was really good. And one thing that really wigged me out is when he goes to visit Clementine at the library and she doesn't know him, there's another guy there. You don't see his face, but you know, she's calling him baby, she's kissing him, and that hurts Joel and he leaves. In his memories, like, he's trying to figure out who that person is, and he's in the library with that memory, and he grabs that guy and turns around, and every time he turns him around, his head's just backwards. Like, he spins him around, he's backwards. Spins him around, he's backwards. He can't see his face.
Yeah, because he didn't have that memory.
Yeah, yeah. He had no idea of who that could possibly be.
Yeah, no, I mean, there's just a lot of interesting thought processes there. In that, like you even said it, we're going in this kind of circle leading us back, because we start at the end where everything's bad. And then you work back to the good. And like I talked with 500 Days of Summer, you know, you have your good days, your bad days. And at the beginning, everything's so good. And by the end, everything's so bad between them, right? Same idea here, where, you know, it's not always like that. You look at any relationship, the beginning is generally really, really good. And if it ends ugly, there are events that led to that. However, there were portions somewhere in there that were still good, and you can gain things from the good and the bad, right? You gain things from the good and the bad experiences. So, you know, you see that final fight right away that they had, and he's seeing the world crumble around him because the dream's getting erased, and he's telling her, like, I'm glad. I'm going to forget you. Never going to remember you, and you're going to be out of my life forever. You made me do this. And then by the end, when things start getting good again, he realizes he doesn't want to lose those memories. He would rather keep the bad and to also keep the good, than to lose it altogether.
And that's just truly beautiful. And it makes you like question, like, you've ever gone through an experience like that with anyone or anything, you know, whatever. Would you personally do something like that? Would you erase that from existence so it just never happened? I feel like most people would say no, but
in the moment,
there's definitely certain experiences where, you know, you might be better off if you never remembered something.
Yeah, like, I mean, that though ties into human nature. It's I think in general we as humans, a lot of times we see it with our kind of the lifestyle that a lot of people have obtained, which is just everything is convenient and very quick and very fast, right? So if you go through a messy breakup and you say, they even say Clementine, she does things on a whim, things very quickly. You know, if you go through a bad breakup and almost immediately like, you know what, I'm done. I'm just wanted out of my mind. We're doing this, you know, that's something to consider. That's kind of how things go, so to speak. But also, you know, naturally, you're over time, time heals all wounds. By the end, you only ever remember the good stuff. To quote Iron Man, you know, because he says, my dad was always tough on me. But in the end, only really remember the good stuff. And that's
Iron Man gets you.
Yeah, exactly. But no, that's legitimate, right? There are bad moments, good moments, but you know, obviously I've had bad moments and good moments, but you choose naturally to forget about the bad moments or just so somewhat, I guess, suppress them. You eliminate them. You focus back on the good. You don't want to, if you focus on the bad too much, that's a problem. We as humans have that ability to eliminate those bad, but it takes time. Whereas this is that instant gratification. What if you could have this fast food-esque version of eliminating it altogether? Sure, it's taken care of, it's gone, but you're losing a part of yourself, even if it is bad, versus, you know, waiting at a fancy restaurant and just letting it take its course, so to speak.
So another aspect of this movie that does get to play off of that, like, would you, could you, why would you, in the case of Joel and Clementine, they're going through what they're going through. But there is a subplot with the doctor, I can't remember the character's name, but it's played by Tom Wilkinson. He is, you know, the head of this company. He's the one who came up with this concept and executes it with the help of Mark Ruffalo's character, Stan, and Kirsten Dunst's character, Mary. Who's the secretary.
And Patrick.
And Patrick, played by Elijah Wood, who's, I guess, Mark Ruffalo's assistant. And there's a subplot involving some of these characters. And to get down to it, once again, this is a spoiler, but...
Real quick, you forgot to mention Elijah Wood and co-starring Elijah Wood's sideburns.
Those are some...
We had one, yes. But what about Elijah Wood's sideburns?
Hey, the sideburns yours? Yeah. Both of them? Yeah. Cool.
See?
But that's right. I almost forgot. But yeah, so you get, like I said, this is about to be a spoiler, but you kind of get into like a morality conflict, an ethical conflict with, I guess, the doctor and the secretary have had a history.
Yes.
Right? And in the past, because of their history, that just shouldn't happen because the doctor's a married man and he's older and has kids. And Mary, the secretary, is young and just, you know, has a crush. A silly girl with a crush is how she puts it. So they erase her memory of it, right? Not himself.
Yeah.
Just her.
Yeah.
So
he remembers and she doesn't.
Yeah. So there's... definitely some ethical conflict there and some morality conflict there. So there's like two sides of this. Like, would you erase your memory, but like what, at what cost? Like at what cost personally, but who else is it affecting, kind of thing?
And at the same time, I mean, this is two instances, but who's to say, you know, she forgot, but she always had the same feeling was there. You know, they're erasing the memories. They're not erasing how you are, who you are. So what happens between Joel and Clementine where they find each other again? Same thing happens with Mary. As she finds herself in the same position once more. She's still working for him, still has the same crush, falls into the same loop. It's almost saying, you know, if you don't have those memories, if you don't have those errors in your life or whatever it may be, how are you supposed to learn from them? If you grab a hot pan and that's the first time you ever grab something out of the oven, you grab it with your hand and it burns you, you know not to do that again. Now, if I walked up to you and erased your memory of grabbing that hot pan, you're going to do it again because you don't know it's hot coming out of the oven, right? It's the same idea. You're going to hurt yourself again because you still have you're the same way. Whereas if, you know, these experiences shape you as a person. So if you get hurt in a relationship, well, the next time you get into a relationship, you know what to look for. You know who you are. You know more of yourself now. I mean, a lot of times in the end of relationships, even you see it in it with both sides, Joel's tape and Clementine's tape, which, again, this podcast isn't, while we're mentioning beats of the story, really should watch the film to understand what we're talking about, because we're not going to go step by step through it, obviously. But at the end of the film, where they both have their tapes, and they're, you know, Clementine plays hers in Joel's car, Joel's playing it, and the thing, you hear them talking about all the things they hate about each other. Joel explains some of the things that he likes about Clementine. If you listen closely, he mentions how, you know, she has the ability to make you feel like you can come out of your shell and there's something more. It's because they're complete opposites. They fill in the other half of each other, so to speak. And maybe that's why they don't work. But at the same time, that's why they're attracted to each other. And so you see that ugliness at the end, the things that they hate about each other and the things they probably would have benefited to express to each other. Now they know what bothers them about each other from these tapes. Each of them, she knows what bothers her about Joel, but so does Joel and vice versa. So now who's to say, as they kind of get back together at the end, so to speak, that this time won't be different because that communication was there, or they've learned from their past, so to speak, versus Mary, who didn't learn from her past, fell into the same ordeal again, and decided to do something about it, so to speak. So it is a concept of morality, but also based on just pure psychology, you know, how do our experiences, our events shape us? You know, part of its nature, sure. You know, just who you are as a person. But a lot of times, who you are as a person is developed by your experiences. So, ultimately,
very, very well said.
It ties back into that, yeah.
And just kind of going with the, I guess, the idea of you're kind of going through a loop if you don't learn nothing. Going back to how the story is even told. Like I mentioned earlier, it's like a circle, right? So constantly, these characters, if they don't learn nothing, they're just going to keep doing the same thing, like touching the hot pan. They keep erasing their memories. It's just going to keep going. So that circle is continuing, even narratively speaking. But there's a visual to it, too. And that would be through Clementine's hair. She dyes her hair multiple times throughout this movie, and I really feel there's a symbolism with them. And so when they first meet, truly first meet, her hair is green, right? And if you, like, break this down into, like, seasons, right, which is another circle, we go through seasons and circles. You get spring, summer, fall, winter. Spring, summer, fall, winter.
I get where you're going with this.
So green is spring. Things are new. Things are being birth, things are growing.
Yeah.
Just like their relationship, their love. They meet. And it's just like, if you pay attention to that kind of thing, and with that thought in mind, it's a very interesting way to kind of keep up with, I guess, how these characters are feeling, but like what part of their relationship you're in and what could be coming next. Because if you got green for like being new, and that's like springtime, red is summer. So that's like them getting into, I guess, their honeymoon phase. Yeah. Like things are great. Like they're peak love. They're crazy about each other. You got like that fiery red hair for Clementine. And in the movie, when he's in his memories and they're racing them, the first time she has the red hair and she disappears, that's when Joel realizes he doesn't want to erase these memories, because that's now he's starting to remember the good stuff.
Yeah.
The good memories. He's like, I don't want to do this anymore. He'll want to keep these things. So then going from Summer with her red hair, that red hair kind of fades a bit and goes to orange. That would be fall. And what happens in fall to like trees and stuff? The leaves.
Leaves fall. They die.
They die. And that's kind of like, there's that scene when they're at dinner and Joel is just like internally thinking.
The dining dead.
Yeah, he's like, are we just becoming one of those couples? And like things are slowing down and they kind of resent each other. And Joel is an interesting character. Like I say, he's very real. He has like certain expectations of Clementine. Like he has a thought of her initially. He's like, oh, she's great. Like she makes me happy. Like because she's this. But she's not really that. I think she even has a monologue about that. That people like objectify her, like make her out to be something that she's not. And she's sick of that. She's her own. She's just, that's when she's like, I'm just some fucked up girl or person trying to figure things out.
Yeah.
Like in that scene, that memory, when things are, you know, dying, he's like, he has these expectations of her that he mentions. She's like, it's not what I thought she was, but he's just like this introverted, quiet, you know, shy person. And she's just very outgoing. Like she's, he just wanted her to be something else, not different than what she was. I guess it's hard to explain.
He wanted her to change, and she wanted him to, she wanted him to change. They both wanted each other to change. She wanted him to become more like her. She wanted him to be more outgoing, not be so apologetic all the time, be quiet and meek. And he wanted her to be more meek, more quiet, not talk all the time, not argue. They wanted to change. What was so interesting to them at the beginning was that they were so different from each other. And then over time, the more they spent time with each other, that became not an interest anymore. It became an annoyance, which led them to, instead of just accepting their differences, they wanted to change each other into who they weren't, so to speak.
Yeah.
You know, and that's,
and to pair that visually, going back to like seasons, spring, let's say you got a fresh leaf, you know, by the time you want things to change, they do, but they die.
Yeah.
they changed, for the worse, I guess. They ended up kind of resenting each other slowly but surely. And Joel's insecurities come out, and that kind of leads us to winter, when they break up. She still had her orange hair, but blue will come soon.
Yeah.
And yeah, he's so insecure and just wants her to change, and she just like Clementine just needs to feel something, and she, you know, goes out drinking and wrecks his car, and he just like in his insecurity accuses her of like fucking someone, because that's the only way people can, you know, she can get people to like them. You know, he attacks her because he's just so afraid.
And that's what's interesting too, is like he immediately regrets that, saying that, and he immediately knows that it isn't true. And he said it. He immediately regrets it, said he doesn't understand why, tries to take it back, but he can't, because what's done is done. What's said is said. But then, when he goes to erase her from her, his memory, he says it again. He repeats it in his anger, in his upset state. He's almost doing what a lot of humans do, which is you go back and you look at all the bad and you just say, you know, it'd be easier if I just full-on hate this person. Because if I full-on hate this person, then there can be no feelings left. Just hate. Just anger. Which is never, obviously, the best thing to do. But it happens. And you can see that. I mean, he literally, he doesn't. And but that leads right into what annoyed her about him. He's so apologetic, you know. He doesn't stay angry. He lashed out at her, but immediately it's like, I'm sorry. And that right there is a trigger to her. I mean, they were just so different, and instead of accepting those differences. But that's why I say there's that importance of they've learned, they can build off of it. They see what their issues were. I mean, who's to say that things wouldn't have worked out if she didn't erase him from her memory and he came with that gift. I mean, she even says he bought that gift for her for Valentine's Day. And in the movie, they make you, when you come in, you have to give all your belongings and things that would remind you of her to them, and they dispose of them. But Patrick, Elijah Wood's character, who's a very big cuck in this film.
I was waiting for you to finish so I could say he's a big cuck.
Yeah, he's a massive cuck in this film. He decides that he loves this girl. He loves Clementine while they're erasing her memory. Yeah, he loves the idea of her, and he's going to take all of Joel's memories, all of his things, his belongings, and utilize them to kind of get into her life, because things were working out for them at some point, so he's like, I can kind of finagle this in, and he gives her the belonging. And she says, like, I don't think anyone's ever bought me a piece of jewelry that I liked. And that right there shows that, you know, that Joel knew Clementine. He knew her very well, and he did care. He cared enough to know exactly what kind of jewelry she would like and who she was as a person. He knew deep down the things he was saying about her weren't necessarily true, tying back to what you were saying. They were his expectations and what he had just come to understand, because they talk about it throughout. He had always been very insecure, and that was his big issue. He was very insecure, and so was Clementine. Because, I mean, I think she has multiple scenes in this movie where she's like, am I ugly? Am I fat?
Yeah.
Even at the end when he shows her a picture that he drew of, like, her head on a skeleton. She's like, you made me skinny. Like, things like that. Like, she's insecure, but so is he. And that's, like, where they're actually very much have something in common, is they're both incredibly insecure. But that leads to a lot of their issues.
And just pinging off of something you had mentioned, that's another interesting aspect of this movie, is at this point, Joel is in memory land, right? But in the real world, Clementine is going through, like, a crisis, where because of Patrick kind of rekindling memories that don't exist, Clementine is so confused, emotionally distraught, doesn't know what's going on. Like, you can't even imagine what a person like that's feeling. It's like deja vu, but to the extreme. And she has her blue hair. You know, you got your most people are sad in the wintertime. And but things can be, I guess, born anew as soon as winter's over. Because if you look, especially in the opening scene, which would take place after what we're talking about now, her roots are showing. Her natural brown hair is growing out.
Yeah.
You know, so spring is upon us. And once again, the circle will continue. Spring will start anew. They'll meet, they'll fall in love, and, you know, they keep going and going and going. So that's another interesting thing that's happening while Joel is battling to keep his memories with of Clementine. And oh man, a fun scene, which is very important too, is when he's trying to hide her in a memory that is kind of like off the map, is he takes her to his childhood and tries to, like, keep her there, right? And I really like those scenes. They allowed some levity, because you get Jim Carrey acting like a young version of himself.
Yeah.
And which was funny, but it was very sweet too, because you get visuals of an actual child Joel and a child Clementine, like, kind of coming to each other's rescue. So, like, even in their youth, they cared for each other, kind of thing. That's just made up for the memory.
That's in Joel's head. Yeah, he was like, she would be there for him, so to speak.
And I really like that, but the toughest scene for me is actually a good scene. It wasn't like something sad or like a bad breakup or like a reminder or anything like that. It was actually, I guess, their farewell, which ended very nicely in the memories. They go back. Joel finally reaches the point where they first met, right? And it's on the beach. It's at that beach house. And in real life, he went in that beach house with her like a romance was blooming, but he left. He ran away. And he wished he didn't. He wished he would have stayed. So now in this memory, he gets to change what he did. He gets to go back and, you know, even though he's going to lose this memory and memory of her forever, he's deciding to just, you know what, live in the moment, enjoy it. And he gets
make
to
make a memory.
Kind of, and you know what?
I think she says that. She said, come back in here and make a memory. Pretty sure that's her words.
What was so... I'm going to try not to
cry. You bitch.
It's... this is my favorite part of the movie, actually. It's Joel's there. Clementine walks up to him. And he says, I love you. And the way he says it is just so real. Like, I just believed it so much. It got me emotional, just the way he said it. And... You know, like, at least if you're following the movie, like, this is it. Like, he's not going to remember her anymore.
Yeah.
And they kiss one last time, and she says, meet me in Montauk. And then he wakes up, and that's how the movie starts. The movie starts with him waking up, going to work, but he decides impulsively, which is uncharacteristic of him, to go to Montauk in the winter. And that's where he meets Clementine. And that's how the movie starts. So we think that's how they met. But as far as the story goes, going through the circle, they're meeting again. Spring is upon us.
Second time for the first time.
And but that's what gets so interesting. Because as you mentioned earlier, they find things out. They find these tapes. They're full of, like, hurtful things. Because when they recorded those, they were angry at each other. But through that, that's where some truth comes out. Things they didn't like about each other, expected of each other, or didn't want of each other. And it's like the lessons that they wish they could have learned prior. And now they're getting a second chance. And they're kind of in this weird situation. Like, why would we do this? We're just going to end up hating each other again. I know that because... here we are saying it. And then Jim Carrey's just like, okay.
Yep.
Let's do it.
And they laugh. I mean, but that's kind of what I'm tying into, though, is now they know these things. They know that things bother them about each other. Maybe that will change them. Like Jim Carrey even says at the beginning, Joel says at the beginning, he's not an impulsive person, but Clementine was. So he had this impulse to go there. To do something, he did change a little bit, and you know, the last time, very very similar. Clementine, you know, Joel tries to get Clementine back in their car after their big fight, and she just walks down the road. Very similar visual to when he kicks her out of her car, and she goes home and she has a cry, and then she comes back to him, you know, they see their issues, and maybe from that they learn more about each other. That's like the communication side of things. Who's to say, you know, if they were more open, less insecure, it maybe things would have worked out. They would have been able to talk to each other more and discuss things more. I mean, he even says at the beginning, like, I can't talk to her about books. That's like one of the first things on his tape, is I can't talk to her about books. Whether it, you know,
more of a magazine reader.
Yeah. And but like, you know, who's to say he couldn't still talk to her about something else? You know, if she reads a magazine, he could read a magazine and talk to her about that, and vice versa. There's that give and take of relationships that they didn't quite have because they spent all their energy and time trying to change each other instead of embracing it.
But there's something there, and that's why these two are kind of destined to always meet each other and fall in love and start anew and just learn something every season, I guess.
Kinda. I mean, at the same time, too, you have to think, theoretically, what if they didn't get their memories erased? You know, again, hearkening back to if they didn't get their memories erased, Joel comes with that Valentine's gift. Maybe things rekindle. Maybe things get better. Maybe she turns it down and the regular old breakup process continues. The hurt is there. And
maybe, or maybe, yeah, you're right. What if they didn't get their memories erased? He goes with that gift And she's like, oh, wow. And they, you know, they start up again.
Yeah.
You're still going in a circle. They're still, you know, destined to just keep doing that over and over again. Like, maybe break up, fall in love again, renew. And that's...
Or things will just be good, too. You mean, you know, people can change as well.
And
but it's similar to, like, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but it's, I just want to finish this point. It's similar to, like, what happens in 500 Days of Summer, where... you have, you know, Joseph Gordon-Levitt's character, obviously very upset at the end, thinking everything's over. He kind of gets his life back on track and goes back to what he loves. He grows from that experience. And at the end, he meets someone new who possibly could be, and that ties in the seasons as well, but possibly could be something new, something different, and change, something changing. Because her name in that movie is Autumn. And so it's the same idea, you know, what would happen if he didn't have that, you know, the memories erased. He could be in that constant flux, could just continue on and things would be better because they know what not to do this time, what not to expect. They know how to, like, what they have to do, embrace the other and change maybe a little bit, have that give and take, or they move on and find someone new. Someone that matches them better, so to speak.
There's a quote said in this movie that is a quote from Alexander Pope.
Pope Alexander.
Yeah. How happy is the blameless Vestal's lot? The world forgetting by the world forgot. Eternal sunshine of the spotless mind. Each prayer accepted and each wish resigned. So basically... what I believe that quote kind of means is eternal sunshine of the spotless mind. Like it's almost like ignorance is bliss.
Yes.
Like if your memory is erased, then like something new is something good kind of thing. And that could be a good thing, but I see that as like a bad thing, and we keep kind of harping on it, but You need to have the bad things. You can't erase them, because if you forget, we're just so conditioned to move on, to forget, to take, like, leave out the bad things, only focus on the good so you can be happier and move on.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of different philosophical things you could take from this. I mean, think like if you spent your life, if you wanted to be, if you knew from a young age, you say, all right, I'm going to be a football player. I'm going to be in the NFL. And you're in high school and you start to realize maybe you're not good enough. And say your desire to be in the NFL was so, so big, or compete in the Olympics, or become a movie star, or something like that was so, so big, but you just realize you're not going to make it. That's a depressing realization, right? So what if you had that aspiration erased? What if you had your lifelong aspiration, what you wanted to do your whole life, erased? Is that a good thing or a bad thing? Is that fact that you're erasing something that was so ingrained in you, that was what you wanted to do, but you realize you can't do it, is erasing that bad? Or would you grow from that experience once more? You know, you see, maybe I can't reach this goal, so I'll set another goal, start anew. There's a lot of philosophical things you could get into with that. Not just, you know, what would happen if a bad relationship happened, but if an event occurs, you know, you didn't get a job, or you didn't reach whatever dream you had or whatever goal you made. You know, what if would by eliminating those things altogether, would the world have no pain? If you could eliminate, you know, stop yourself from not achieving something, so to speak, or stop yourself from getting in a relationship that gets you hurt, would the world always have that eternal sunshine and always be a happy place, or would there always be something missing? And I think just naturally, while it probably would be an always a happy place, it'd be very artificial. It's not what makes us human, so to speak, on a philosophical level. Now, we're just lowly podcasters speaking out of our asses, but that's my thought. Is ultimately, you know, that's a big portion of what makes you human, is your experiences, your events. You know, the question quite often that, you know, you hear whenever philosophy is brought up is what is the meaning of life? And ultimately, it's to gain these experiences that we live through all day-to-day life, right? So the experiences are what form us and shape us, and to eliminate those altogether is something that just doesn't seem right when it all boils down to it. No matter how bad the hurt or the pain, it's something you got to live through and grow from it.
I love the conversation this movie can spark and invoke. I love talking symbolism stuff. I'm not always the best at it. I always found you were very good at doing that.
I think I'm just good at talking out of my ass.
Well, I don't think you're wrong. I always have to do like some kind of research. I mean, it's more like I have my thoughts, I do a little research, and I'm like, oh, you know what, that I was right on that, or I can speak more on this now because I've done a bit of reading. You've always been very good at just like watching something and kind of just naturally breaking it down, which I think's good. And I love movies like this. I do love this movie. I've honestly only seen it twice.
This is only my second time seeing it as well, or my first, yeah, if I ask you. But I got that erased from your memory.
if you could, if you're Jimmy Stewart and you had to erase one love interest from his life, who would it be?
Oh, it's got to be Madeline. It's got to be Madeline. You don't want to remember Madeline. Or, you know what, you don't want to remember gravity. Because if you remember gravity, you don't have that vertigo.
What if he doesn't remember vertigo?
What if he doesn't remember bourbon? Some whiskey, some brandy. The first love of his life, Cushion.
What if we erased vertigo from his mind, and then he experiences vertigo? He's like, what is this?
He goes up a step and down a step, and up two steps and down a step, and whoa. Get nervous, get that vertigo, see it like 10 times, have that fucked up dream where I see my head floating and lines going everywhere. Oh, jeez.
Why did they erase that bad memory?
Yeah, that's a bad memory. Erase the memory of Madeline falling to her death.
Speaking of memory, I wanted to say this earlier and I forgot, probably because it was erased from me. In the opening scene, or not the opening scene, but like in their initial meeting for us viewers, when she's like, don't make any jokes about my name. It's Clementine. He's like, I wouldn't know any jokes. He's like, oh, you know, like the song, like, oh, my darling, oh, my darling, oh, my darling, Clementine from Huckleberry Hound.
Yeah.
He has like no clue. But in a memory from his childhood, when his mother is giving him a bath in the sink, she's singing that song.
That and the first time they meet. I don't know if you remember that as well.
Yeah.
She says no jokes about my name, and he says like what, like oh my darling, and then he says that, you know, there wasn't anywhere I'd go without my Huckleberry Hound doll or whatever. So he, in doing the erasing, he like erased a memory from childhood that wasn't even clear. Like the original memory wasn't tied to her, but it eventually became tied to her.
Yeah, exactly. So he erased that song and that moment. So in their initial meeting for us viewers, he has no clue what that song is. I thought that was brilliant.
Yeah.
It was so good.
I mean, it's almost like a time travel movie in a sense.
It's a time travel movie that is only time travel for us viewers. We're experienced, as you said at the opening, we're along for the ride.
Yeah. It's a very, very much, there is almost a sense of dramatic irony throughout where it's, you know things that are going on that the characters don't.
I mean, there's a very particular point, I would say early in the film, that we know how this movie's going to kind of end up. We know where it's going. We know where it's going back to that beginning.
Yeah.
Like, things are said and the pieces are blatantly put together that, oh, they're going to meet each other again after this. But what's going to happen is the question. So you keep watching.
Kind of. Yeah.
But I think it's a great movie. One of Jim Carrey and Kate Winslet's best. Definitely check it out if you haven't. If you got into this point in the show and you haven't seen this movie, shame on you. We told you to pause.
I'm sorry, little one.
Yeah. We told you to pause and go check it out. So hopefully you did.
Yeah.
And maybe you enjoyed it.
Yeah, hopefully it did enjoy. I mean, it's...
It had been so long since I've seen this movie. And last week when I said to you that it's a tough watch. Like, it's not a movie you watch all the time. It's not a tough watch.
No.
Like,
I think it's a fun movie. The music, fun. We didn't really touch base on the music, but the music's almost... There's moments where I'm like, this sounds like Danny Elfman did this. Like, it's very whimsical and dreamlike, so to speak, throughout. I think it's an enjoyable film to watch
When I say a tough watch, I don't mean like the movie's bad or anything. I mean it's like emotionally taxing.
Yeah.
And it is to a degree, but it's a hopeful movie, I feel.
Yeah.
It's like you can take some life lessons from it in a good way.
Yeah. Some philosophical lessons and it's one of those movies that's going to it's going to affect everyone differently. Everyone's going to have different feelings about it and view it differently. I mean, very similar. I'm going to bring it back to 500 Days of Summer, but similar to that, where depending on your experiences and how you're watching it, even how you're feeling at that given time, you'll view who the bad guy of the relationship is, so to speak, differently throughout the movie. I mean, there are moments where I'm like, oh, Joel's kind of an asshole. And there's moments where I'm like, Clementine's kind of an asshole as well. Same with what we did with 500 Days of Summer, where you watch it and you're like, Summer's a terrible person, when you like watch it maybe the first time. And then the second time you look at it and you're like, she's really not that bad throughout. And, you know, so it changes based on your experience, based on your viewing. And ultimately, I think that that's just something that's really unique about these movies, where, in my opinion, you get a lot of these like Nicholas Sparks. That's what comes to mind, but those types of movies, not just necessarily a Nicholas Spark romantic movie, but those types of movies, that type of romantic comedy, where they're almost artificial. They don't feel real. Whereas this feels real. Not all, you know, it's not a fairy tale. A lot of times the rom-coms and romantic movies are very much fairy tale-esque. Whereas these movies feel very real and drawn out. And I said this one was almost like a dark romantic comedy, so to speak, or a dark romance movie, dark romance drama. I think a lot of times that, you know, there are aspects of life that are just dark and sad. And you find that at times throughout relationships and different things like that. And it's just, these movies are more realistic, I think, which makes them maybe a harder watch is what you're saying in that aspect, but an easy watch, and that is just a really enjoyable film and really awesome to see Jim Carrey in a different light. Even Kate Winslet. I mean, Kate Winslet's a phenomenal actress, but you watch her in something like Titanic and then watch her in this, she is a completely different character than some of her other films.
One of the best. She got nominated for an Oscar for this movie, and I truly think Jim Carrey got snubbed, not even recognized at the Oscars for this performance. It was a tough year, but man,
hey, he's two-time Golden Globe winning actor Jim Carrey.
He's like the Tom Hanks of the Golden Globes.
You ever watched that, his acceptance, or his like one? I don't think it's his acceptance speech, but it's like he's announcing an award at the Golden Globes, and he walks up and he's like, hello, I'm two-time winning actor, Golden Globe actor winning Jim Carrey. He's like, when I wake up in the morning, I'm not just any other guy. I am two-time Golden Globe winning.
Isn't that when he was like announcing an Oscar or something?
Something like that.
Yeah, he's like, ah, so this is what one of those feels like or something like that. Yeah. I can't remember.
It's really good. But yeah, it's an interesting, even, I mean, Elijah Wood's in a lot of stuff, obviously. Mark Ruffalo is in a lot of stuff. Mark Ruffalo is pretty much the same as he always is.
He does a great dance in this movie.
He does.
He should be nominated for an Oscar for the dance.
Yeah. But see, you see Elijah Wood in a different light in this movie too. I mean, if you just know him as like Frodo or from Wilfred even, or any of the other shows he's in, cause I know he's in a newer show. I forget what it's called though. But you see him in some of his other stuff. He is ultimately one of the bad guys in this film. And he's like despicable.
He geoffreyed me for a bit in this movie. Like, I hated him so much in this movie, I just didn't like him in other stuff for a while. I'm like, that son of a bitch.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting.
He's good at being bad.
Yeah.
I hate
and
him.
It's like the you wouldn't expect it out of him, so to speak, which is interesting. So you get to see a lot of different characters in a different light in this movie. It's an interesting concept, interesting take, and I really do think, I mean, hell, if you hadn't watched it, again, to borrow the words of grandmother, shame on you.
If you haven't watched it, in the words of Jack Torrance, go check it out. It's in The Shining.
Jack Torrance. I was like, I went to the other Jack character played by Jack Nicholson, the Joker. And I was like, I don't remember him saying that in Batman.
he certainly doesn't.
Dan, steady boy. I'm coming.
Speaking of different roles, what if we took this movie to the factory?
Indeed. Indeed. So in this portion of the show, this is where we take the film we just watched and we imagine what it would look like if it came out today. Who would direct it? Who would compose it? Who would star? Same film, same story, modern booking, modern audience. This film came out in 2004. So here we are, 2021. You know, obviously, what, off the top of my head, 17 years later? So enough time has passed for a reboot. I think that's how the world works nowadays. So here we are, same film, same story, modern booking. So for today's factory, what are we looking at? What are you feeling factoring?
Let's just stick with our two lovebirds. Let's do Joel and Clementine.
Is that the most Pittsburgh way I've ever say factory? Factoring? What are we factoring here?
Factoring. Yeah, probably.
Factorying
isn't even a word.
No, but here we are. I even dropped the S on it, because that's another thing. It was supposed to be factorins, but here we are, because that's a thing here, too. Actually, it would be adding an S, right? Be adding an S.
What if that was the, I can't remember the catchphrase on the movie poster of this movie, like Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. No matter where you're at, there you are.
Jesus. What is it? Is it, do Pittsburgh, is it, or is that, is it Pittsburgh thing, or is it just our mother ingrained it in us? You add S's to things. Like, we're going to Aldi's, and it's Aldi.
See pennies.
Yeah, is it a mother, or was it like a Western Pennsylvanian thing?
No, I think that's a thing. Our mother definitely did it. So
yeah, JCPenney's, we're going to Aldi's. I mean, I still say that. You going to Aldi's?
Going down to Walmart's.
I don't think we ever said that one.
Diehard? I say JCPenney's. Yeah, I say JCPenney's. I say Aldi's often. There's other ones I'm just not thinking of.
Yeah.
I'm erasing my memory.
Yeah, see?
Thanks to Jim Beam, not Lacuna Inc.
Jim Beans. It belongs to him. But here we are at the factory, so doing Joel and Clementine. So I have a Clementine in mind. Joel escapes me because it's... What's that?
Jim Beams. It's his.
It's his, Joe. It's his.
Oh my god! You kept going. I was dying.
That belongs to me.
Jim Beams.
That's his, like, bourbon. That's drawn semi drawn from probably internally and subconsciously a Family Guy joke, because there is a very old joke from Family Guy from one of the first seasons, where Peter says, I need a little help or a little motivation or courage or something from my old friend Jack Daniels. And he picks up the phone and he's like, Mrs. Daniels? Mrs. Daniels? Oh my God, when and how? Oh, that poor Jack. Like, his friend Jack Daniels died. It's a classic Family Guy joke because it's not that funny.
I wasn't laughing as hard as
Jim Beams.
So go ahead and introduce what the hell we're doing.
Well, I already did introduce. However, what I was saying was I have my Clementine pretty much like for sure. This is who I want. The Joel escapes me because I don't know of a comedian that I want to place in this role. Because I do want a comedian in this role. I want to keep it that way. I want a comedian in a serious role. Jason Sudeikis came to mind. Sudeikis. He came to mind. I thought maybe he would be a good pick. But it really escaped me. I really couldn't come to for sure. I mean, I was looking at younger comedians. I was like, oh, maybe Colin Jost. But I was like, I haven't really seen him in anything other than WrestleMania. And Scarlett Johansson. But I had a very big loss, so I really don't have anyone in mind for Joel. I guess Jason Sudeikis would be my best option, best pick. I've never really truly seen him in anything serious, so to speak. Seen him in several films. We Are the Millers. I've seen him in things like... why is it escaping me now? What's that?
SNL?
Oh, yeah, SNL. But there's another movie that was coming to mind, and now it's Horrible Bosses, which is a horrible movie. So, I've only seen him in comedies, really. So I thought him at first. I even thought at one point, instead of doing, a straight comedian, doing Bradley Cooper, tying in some of that, maybe not get the gravelly voice, but some of that Star Is Born energy in there. But I wanted to keep it a comedian, so I'm at a loss. I'm going to pass it to you for Joel. Who do you have in mind for Joel?
Yeah, Joel, I didn't go the comedic route, trying to pull off a Jim Carrey. I went with a mostly dramatic young actor. And I went with my boy Freddie Highmore. Freddie Highmore,
the good doctor himself.
Yeah, the good doctor himself. Patrick Bateman. No, sorry, that's not it. Norman Bates himself.
You wish he was Patrick Bateman.
No, I don't. Because Freddie Highmore, I think, would really pull off that awkward, insecure, shy, introverted character. But also
because he's done it before.
Yeah,
with Norman Bates,
I'm comfortable with this pick.
Yeah, I am too. That's a good pull.
He's got that, but he's got that dramatic side. He can make you laugh. He can make you cry. I said the dramatic side. He'll make you laugh.
That's Charlie. That's Charlie in the Chocolate Factory. Damn it.
Yeah, that's August Rush himself. And yeah, I thought he'd be a good fit for Joel. So. Let's flip the coin and see what destiny has.
For what? There's no... I didn't pick anyone.
You said Jason Sudeikis.
Yeah, but I said mine suck. I want Freddie Highmore. Flip it. Heads, Freddie Highmore. Tails, Freddie Highmore.
It landed on its side.
Jesus, no. Oh, God, no.
Yeah, it did land heads. There you go. Not heads, tails, damn it.
Now it's usually yours, so it's okay. We'll take it.
Yep.
Now I did have a Clementine in mind. I wanted an actress who can be eccentric, and I've seen her be eccentric in things. But recently, because Kate Winslet has this thing where in this movie, especially, she comes across as very eccentric, but at times she comes across as really cold. She's quick to anger. She's almost intimidating, right? And this actress that I chose, I've seen her in several things. Always very, I've seen her have this fun side to her. I've seen her have a serious side to her. And recently in an interview, she said that a lot of people see her as very cold and intimidating when she's just kind of being herself. And that's Daisy Ridley. I think you put some different hair colors in Daisy Ridley. I was thinking how she is when she's very, very nice and bubbly in Force Awakens, which I just rewatched recently, or even some of the fun scenes in The Last Jedi, or not The Last Jedi, rather, Rise of Skywalker. versus some of the darker scenes too that you get in those movies. But also just, I was thinking in terms of her ability to kind of go up and down. But then when they were like, she said, a lot of people find me very intimidating and cold. I was like, that might work into my favor. So I was like, Daisy Ridley, I think, would be able to pull off Clementine.
Okay. And, you know, she has her darker moments in Rise of Skywalker, yes, as well. And she has that vision of a Sith Rey.
And with sharp, big sharp teeth.
Yes. I pulled out a classic Brothers Movie Factory pull.
Scarlett Johansson.
Along those lines. Haven't used her in a while. Oscar-nominated actress. My personal favorite actress working today. And that's my girl, Saoirse Ronan.
Saoirse.
Now, yes, I'm getting a bit of Lady Bird vibes with different hair and kind of being rebellious and impulsive and whatnot. But... like, I really feel Saoirse can pull off anything, whether it's something like from Lady Bird or something from like Little Women or Mary Queen of Scots, damn it, or even her role when she was very young in Atonement. My favorite actress working today, and I just feel like she can really pull off that complexity that Clementine has, but like from something like Lady Bird, where it's a very real, natural character, I just really feel could resonate well from Saoirse.
Indeed.
So let's see what the coin says. Heads, Rey Palpatine. Tails, Lady Bird.
You watch your mouth. Her name's Rey Skywalker.
And hey, we got Saoirse Ronan.
Saoirse Ronan, indeed. So we got Freddie Highmore and Saoirse Ronan. That would be, I think those are both good pulls, and I think that Freddie Highmore, definitely, I can see that working. I think those are both good choice, for sure. So Joel, Freddie Highmore, Clementine, Saoirse Ronan. With that being said, that is the factory for this week. Smaller factory, but here we are in June Carrey week, or not, I won't even say week two. We're trying to do 3 Jim Carrey movies this month.
By the end of the month.
By the end of the month. And we'll get it done. Yeah, we'll basically get it done. And so, yeah, we got our second Jim Carrey movie in June Carrey. Next week, what are we doing next week? We did a serious Jim Carrey. We did a silly Jim Carrey. What's next week? Mr. Pop vs. Penguins? A shitty Jim Carrey?
I was just going to say this. I think it's time we do a bad Jim Carrey movie. But then what could be considered a bad movie? Because
a number a 23.
Movie. Yeah, sometimes there's a bad one that people love. I don't know.
I remember we watched the number 23, like the first time we watched it, and you liked it because it like wigged you out. Like numerology wigged you out.
Numerology? I haven't checked that out since. You know, there's so many movies that we could visit, because we could visit Ace Ventura. We could visit How the Grinch Stole Christmas. No, we can't.
That, I want that. Be for I July want that, Carrey. Yeah. That would be July. Carrey. Yeah, Christmas in July, or just Christmas in general. That's one of my most watched Christmas movies and one of my biggest childhood fears. So we will visit that someday.
And then you got, like, Truman Show, which is also one of my favorites of his, and Liar Liar, which I haven't seen in so long, and The Mask, which is, like, there's so many to pull from, so we might as well just do Sonic the Hedgehog.
I do like Sonic the Hedgehog. I did. I really did enjoy Sonic the Hedgehog. Surprisingly, when they cast him as Dr. Eggman and Robotnik, I was like, yeah, this is not the right choice, and by the end, I was like, that was a really good choice. I mean, if I had my pick next week, and I'll toss it out there and we can agree right here or say a later date is needed, but I would like to do When Nature Calls. I think that's our second most watched Jim Carrey movie overall, one that we grew up with and watched quite frequently. I think I prefer it to the original Ace Ventura. So that would be my pick for next week.
Indeed. So we'll have it figured out for our Spit listeners and they'll be along for the ride for June Carey.
Indeed. So any questions before we hit the road? Are we good?
If you were to erase one memory of the Brothers Movie Factory, what would it be?
That's difficult. There's not bad things occurring on the Brothers Movie Factory. I would erase the Batman, having to watch Batman v Superman.
Here you go. Something like that. Like, you know what I would erase?
Every time you farted.
No,
during the show.
That's good stuff. I guess this wouldn't benefit anything, but that, oh, maybe that time that we recorded Paprika and it only got your audio. So if I could forget that ever happened, that'd be great. Or maybe how many edits I had to do in the GoldenEye review.
That would have been a Patreon exclusive. If we had a Patreon, I would have been like, just drop the Paprika episode with just me on the Patreon. Like, that would have been good. You just get audio of me talking to no one for an hour and a half.
Our audio is always hit or miss. Sometimes it's good, sometimes it's bad, especially like a year or two ago.
Oh, God. That's the episode. I would erase the first and only Ben story time where I went through my video game list. That audio is atrocious, and I would like to do it again. Like, I would almost like rather eliminate that episode altogether from existence and then like redo it someday.
Yeah, that can certainly happen. But it was we did Lost World Jurassic Park, and right around that time, I was going to ask Matt Provencal to do an interview with us for his film Kingsblade. And that was the first time we were going to, you know, reach out to someone like that. So I assumed, you know, they're going to hear this question and listen to our most recent episode, which at that point was going to be Lost World Jurassic Park. And somehow my audio was super hot, like loud, and yours was very quiet. So every time you spoke, I had to cut that audio, increase the volume, so it was like even. I still don't know if it was good or not. I've learned different ways to do that now, that I could have made it happen a little better, but at that time this is what I did, and it was the hardest edit we've had to do on the show, or I've had to do on the show. Yeah, so maybe that one.
Maybe that one. Hey, maybe. Yeah, you've come with much more better ways now. Indeed. Well, that is the show, everyone. We hope you enjoyed it. If you liked what you heard, be sure to check us out over on Audioboom. That is our primary source. That's where we post the show to first, and then subsequently it gets shipped out everywhere else. So Spotify, Google Play, iTunes, wherever you listen to podcasts, hey, we're there. You can also find us at Twitter. We are at The Bros Movie Pod. That's where we'll be posting links to the show, clips of the show, memes Gus makes, and things like that. You can also find us over on Facebook.
Hey, go to Facebook, type in the Brothers Movie Factory. You'll remember us. You didn't go to Lacuna Inc., I promise. Like what we post, share what we post, follow along as I like to make memes of what we're watching each and every week, and as well as the links to the things Ben mentioned a moment ago, like Audioboom, Spotify, Twitter, and at.
So that is the show. We hope you enjoyed it, but until next week, brothers.
Brothers.
Brother. I forgot what I was gonna say.